Let's all open in our Bibles to Mark's Gospel, chapter 5, starting in verse 21. There's one very, very important aspect of God that we are going to see this morning, and the Lord very graphically records through His servant Peter's recollections, as written by Mark, his close associate, the events starting in verse 21. And this entire story could be distilled down to the reality that two people wanted to get in touch with Jesus Christ. One was totally in a hopeless condition. The other was in a total helpless condition. One of them was totally ashamed of their wretchedness, their defiled condition, and they wanted no one to know about it except God. The other one was so stricken with their illness that they could not even get up out of bed. They were near death, and they sent someone else to get in touch with the Lord Jesus Christ. Touching God out of great need, out of great defilement, out of great hopeless and helpless condition is what these few verses are about. As we start in verse 21 and look at the actual scene, I want to remind you that everything that God has done in our creation points toward the fact that if we are in touch with the universe around us, then most certainly the creator of the universe has far greater capacity to be in touch with you and me. Think about that for a second. In fact, in this very second that I'm talking to you, inside of each one of our brains this morning, 5 trillion chemical reactions take place every second to maintain your involuntary and voluntary responses, your heartbeat, your respiration, all of the various activities going on in your body. 5 trillion chemical reactions per second. And I know some of you are probably operating at 4 right now. But as soon as your coffee hits or whatever, you'll be at 5 trillion. And you'll be thinking and moving and remembering. And in through the 5 portals, the 5 gateways of your senses, comes the awareness of the world around us. Think about the fact of the acuity, of the great phenomenal power you have to see and hear and smell and touch and taste things. If we can do that, if a normal human eye, uncorrected, if it's just the way God made it, if it's functioning as normal, you can see a candle 15 miles away. One photon of light can hit your eye and react, and you can see it. Our ears can hear 300,000 different sounds and distinguish between them. Your nose can detect and remember 10,000 different fragrances, odors, smells, and attach them all to a memory. And if our little paltry systems can do that, the one who created them, can you imagine what he can do? Can you imagine the sensitivity he has to see right inside of every one of your hearts and lives this morning? He knows. He senses. He can be touched if we reach out to him. Let's look at some that are reaching out to touch him in verse 21. And when Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, and as you know from chapter 4, he had left the marvelous events of the feeding and all the marvelous teaching he had done. He'd gone through a storm. He'd stilled the storm. They'd landed the next morning. They were on the Gadara side, the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. A naked, demonized man comes screaming and running up to him. Christ rebukes him, heals him. And then he leaves there and comes back across the water. And that's where he is. It's the next day. And he came across, and a great multitude, the same crowd that had been listening to him preach in chapter 4, they came and gathered about him. In fact, it says, verse 21, that he stayed by the seashore. They had gathered to such a large, large crowd that he couldn't even get away from the seashore. Now, using your senses, perceive the condition of the morning. Here is a weary man who had just confronted Satan's hosts, who had just done battle with the kingdom of darkness, who had just delivered a man of thousands of demons. And he's with a bunch of men that didn't even know what he was doing, that were always doubting, and you'll see in a minute they're going to pick at him again. His disciples were not the most supportive group in the world. And they got out of that handmade, rough-hewn wooden boat, weathered by all the storms it had been through. It was still parked right on the shore. You can still smell the seaweed. You can just feel the cool morning air. And here comes this mass of people with their robes flashing and just flopping in the wind and their sandals clumping down, and they just get him right on the shore. They want more. They want to listen to him. They want to hear him. The scene that Mark sets for us here is so gripping, and I hope you can see it, because to see Jesus Christ touching this woman in need, to see Jesus Christ reaching out to a father with a dying daughter in need, you have to see the entire scene. Verse 22, "And one of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up." Now, that sounds so simple. I mean, you just read those words, and he just kind of got out of the car, parked right up by Jesus, right, and walked over and talked to him, right? No, there's a mass of people pressing Christ from every corner, and Jesus is reduced to standing on the water, watery shore on the Sea of Galilee's rocky shore going up, and these people are just massed in front of him, and all of a sudden, a man comes bursting through the crowd. He's pushing, he's shoving, and he comes through, he looks around and catches sight of Christ, and it says in verse 22, he dove to Christ's feet. He fell at his feet. Through the crowd, a man makes his last lunge and throws himself down. Now, there's a man that wanted to get in touch with God. You know, the scriptures tell us that you'll seek me and find me when you seek for me with what? All your heart. And it says in the book of Isaiah, how few there are that stir themselves up to lay hold on God. Well, here's a portrait of someone that did that. Here's a portrait of someone who wanted so desperately to be in touch with God that they knew Jesus Christ was God in human flesh, or they knew he was a great prophet from God, they knew he was in touch with God, and they say, if I can get to you, I can get to God. Verse 23, "And he entreated him earnestly, saying, my daughter, my little daughter, is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her that she may get well and live." Now, this fellow is pretty important. It's also, the same story is repeated in Matthew chapter 9 and Luke chapter 8, as well as right here in Mark chapter 5. The synoptics all give three camera angles of this little scene. And what we find out, this guy wasn't just a ruler of the temple. This was the president of the synagogue, not temple, the synagogue. He was the head of the local synagogue. He's the one that was in charge of the order of service. He invited the guest speakers. He was the one that watched over all the affairs of that local group of people in that synagogue. Now, most synagogue leaders were not very friendly to Jesus Christ. He was an outsider. He had never gone to the schools, the rabbinic schools. He was not a great lettered man of the law. He was kind of an itinerant unknown. But this guy overwhelmed all of his prejudices, all of his hesitations at this man. He had one single goal. He wanted to touch Jesus Christ and have him touch his daughter. He implores him that his daughter, the end of verse 23, just put your hands on her that she may get well and live. He had complete faith. He begged Christ to come and heal his only daughter. Well, verse 24 tells us, he went off with him. In other words, this guy started leading the way. He says, come on, Jesus, come on. And he started pushing his way through the crowd, and Christ starts following him. And a great multitude was following him and pressing in on him. So you can imagine these people were excited anyway to see Christ. And now this big scene had taken place of a man falling down and saying, come, my daughter's dying, come. And he starts shoving his way through the crowd. Jesus comes right behind him, and everybody just swallows up. The crowd swallows around Christ, and they just press on him. Now, the word for pressing is, it's hard to describe. You only can feel it. If you've ever been at some famous concert or show where everybody wanted to get in, I remember when I used to go to a Bible conference, you had to get there an hour early before they'd open the doors because there were only 3,000 seats in the place. And they had speakers from around the world, the great biblical speakers of that time, about 20 years ago. And I remember our family used to get there, and you'd get there an hour early, and it would be kind of normal. And a half hour, and just before they opened the doors, you couldn't move. And you were just standing, literally pinned. You had to go like this to get into your pocket. You know, you were just that tight. I remember another time I crossed the ferry across the Straits of Gibraltar to Africa. And they have no idea of safety regulations. And for 2 hours, with 10,000 Moroccans, I think, were on that boat, I was just like this. I could not move. In fact, I saw people around me falling asleep, standing up, because they were so squashed. And that's the Greek word for being pressed. Christ could barely take a step forward. He was being pressed by these people. They were literally touching him, squashing him, as he pushed through them. Verse 25. A new scene. The hopelessness of this dying girl is displaced by the second actor on the stage of touching Christ, and a woman who had had a hemorrhage for 12 years. Now, the little girl we're going to meet at the end of the story was 12 years old. Isn't it interesting? She had been alive for 12 years in very probable good health. This woman had been living in terrible, dreadful uncleanness and sickness, a flowing of blood, a hemorrhage, a total ceremonial uncleanness that had excluded her from society. Now, we're talking about Israel. This woman was so unclean, you couldn't talk to her, you couldn't touch her, she could not come to the synagogue or the temple, ever. And if you touched her, you were told that you were unclean and you had to go wash yourself and you were unclean for 1 or 2 or 3 days, depending on who was telling you the rules for purification. Verse 26. She'd endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all that she had had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. That's an indictment on the physicians. I'm glad they've gotten better over the years. In fact, if you read in the Jewish writings, they would try out stuff. They would try salves and ointments and powders, and they'd tell them to take this and that. And the physicians back then were kind of experimenting on live human beings. It says in verse 26, she'd done everything they told her. She had followed through on every proposed treatment. She had endured it all. It had afflicted her, and it cost her all that she had, but to no avail. She was still bleeding. She was still unclean. She was still separate from society. As a leper we met earlier in chapter 2, so this bleeding woman was totally unclean and separate from society. Verse 27, after hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him, and listen, and touched his cloak. Now, every good Jewish man in that day followed the Old Testament teaching to remind everyone about God on the four corners of their outer coat. It was just a big square sheet. On the four corners were tassels, one on each corner, and then they put it on kind of like a poncho, and those four tassels would hang down from the four corners of the sheet that they wore on their outer garment. And underneath were all the other things they wore, and they would take that off. It was what they wrapped around their head when they slept. It's what they just used as a protection. And there were four tassels, and it says that this woman came and touched his, and Luke 8:44 tells us, the fringe or the tassel. It just says here in Mark that she touched his cloak, but she didn't even get that far. She just touched that little tassel hanging off. Now, what happened was, this woman was so embarrassed, she was so ashamed, she was so unclean, she was so unworthy of getting close to Christ, that in her heart, she knew she had a need, just like Jairus did, but she didn't want to tell anybody, she just wanted Jesus to heal her, and her faith was so great, and so big, and so grand, that she just said, if I can just get up behind him and touch that tassel, I know he can heal me. So she did it, and look what happens. Verse 28, for she thought, if I just touch his garment, I shall get well. And verse 29 says, and immediately the flow of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. It's real important to note two things. The first thing is, both these people had needs. Jairus had a need. His daughter was almost dead. She dies in about one verse. This woman had a need because her very life was flowing out of her. For 12 years it had been ebbing and flowing, and now she had gotten down to nothing but a withered, shriveled up, age before her time woman approaching death. She'd run out of money, she'd run out of hope, she was totally helpless. One man comes running up and knocks everybody over and dives at Christ's feet and looks up and says, help me. And Jesus does. Another one comes to him secretly, so ashamed of their condition, and just with no one looking, reaches through all of those different myriads of people and finally gets through and finds that tassel and grabs it for just an instant and lets go. Now think about this, how sensitive our God is. Jesus Christ noticed the man and responded to him. Look at verse 29 or 30. And immediately Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" Now look at this very supportive group of people that ministered alongside of Christ. And his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?' Come on, let's get going. What are you doing? What are you stopping the gang for?" You know, Christ stopped everything. And everybody always listened to him. And he started looking around. He says, "Who touched me?" The disciples are going, "We've been in the boat all night. Come on, let's go. This guy's girl's dying. We've got to go eat lunch. What? Who touched you? Everybody's touching you." Peter probably said, "I touched you." See, they don't realize who they're with. They don't realize God in human flesh. Think about the power of Christ's perception. He felt one withered, white, trembling, dying hand of an old woman come through a crowd and touch his garment. He felt it, and he released from his divine essence power to heal her instantly, just like that. And then he stops everything to talk to her. Now let's see why. Verse 32, and he looked around to see the woman who had done this. You notice it says he looked around to see the woman. Had he any doubt who it was? Had he any doubt who had touched him? Had he not eternally in the past known that this event would take place to teach a lesson? Verse 33, but the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. Lesson number one, only Jesus can meet your need. Lesson number two, if Jesus Christ meets your need, he demands that you tell what he has done. And I think there's a truth in here that every single Christian should get a hold of, and every single one who has been seeking after Jesus Christ and you have found him, whether you have come boldly running up and telling everybody, "I'm in need, Jesus can help me, Jesus," or if you're ashamed of your condition, whatever it might be. Whatever way you come to Christ, knowing he has the power to meet your need, Jesus Christ, verse 33, demands that you tell what he has done. Verse 34 gives her confession. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Be healed of your affliction." Now listen, why did he do that? Why did Jesus go to all that trouble? Why did he stop the crowd? Why did he wait so long that the girl dies? I mean, everybody was asking that in the crowd. Why didn't he just get up there and heal the dying 12-year-old? Because Jesus Christ has two kinds of people that come after him. People with needs public and people with needs private. And Jesus Christ said, if you're not willing to confess me openly, then I won't confess you before my Father. There is something about the supernatural power God has to transform that has with it the power to take away our fears and to make us willing to publicly confess and profess Jesus Christ. And if Jesus Christ has met your need, maybe the need of your salvation, the need of your cleansing from all sin, maybe some other great need, if you're not willing to confess that openly, then you are not whole yet. Because Jesus Christ said, after she had come forward in verse 34, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." You know what peace means? Shalom, the Hebrew concept, is to be made complete. A person who's not complete is not at peace. They're just falling apart. They just don't have what they need. They're always searching here and there and drink this and eat that and try this thing, put on these clothes and get this self-help thing. They're not complete. When you meet someone totally at peace, you meet someone that's totally complete. They don't need anything else. They've got everything they need in Jesus Christ. And this woman was complete after she was willing to reach out with her need to Christ and be healed and then confess him publicly. Well, the scene goes on. What a marvelous sight this is. But verse 35, and while he was still speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official and said, "Your daughter has died. Don't trouble the master anymore." Well, Christ was waiting for that. And Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Don't be afraid any longer. Only believe, verse 37, they pulled up to the house where the girl had been, and he allowed no one to follow with him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came into the house of the synagogue official, and he beheld a commotion and people loudly weeping and wailing. If you know anything about Middle Eastern society, it was a law that you had to have wailing going on at the house. It was a law of the Jews. You had to have people lamenting and crying. There were rules about where you tore your clothes. The women had to tear their clothes on the left side. The men had to tear their clothes on the right side. The women had to take off and turn around their clothes and leave the rips in the back. The men could tear it all the way to the skin. They had all kinds of rules. You had to put ashes on you. You had to scream and yell, play flutes. It was just a real circus when someone died. And entering in, verse 39, he said to them, "Why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep." Now look at this reception to Jesus Christ, the Lord of life. Verse 40. And they were laughing at him, but putting them all out, he said, "Out, you unbelievers, out! I've got work to do here." He took along the child's father and mother and Peter, James, and John, his own companions. He entered the room where the child was. And taking the child by the hand, he said to her, now this is one of those phenomenons in the Bible. It's not a misprint, folks. In your Bible, if you have a good translation, it has two Aramaic words, talitha kum, or talitha kumi, depending on which edition you might have. Do you know why those two words are in there? It's not that they couldn't translate them. It's because this thing is going along in Koine Greek. Mark was writing along, recording Peter's words, and all of a sudden when he came here, Peter just went, "Oh, those words are still ringing in my ears. I'll never forget what Jesus said." And so he said to him, "Talitha kum, little girl, get up, arise." You see, when Mark wrote this gospel for us under the inspiration of God's Spirit, recounting Peter's remembrances of Christ's earthly ministry, Peter, that many years removed from the actual scenes, was so overwhelmed at what he had seen that day that he could never forget that scene. Which translated means, because most of us don't speak Aramaic, and especially the Roman people that received this gospel couldn't, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Verse 42. And immediately the girl got up and began to walk, for she was 12 years old, and immediately they were completely astounded. I want to tell you something. They don't start wailing at Jewish funerals until they've covered the body, never again to be seen. That means that either they had locked her in the box or wrapped her up, or they had done something to permanently remove her from sight. It was the law. You don't start wailing until the last time their face would be seen. So we know from the text that they had started wailing that for some reason they had closed her off so she would never again be seen. And that's why Jesus had to go alone into the room, because whatever they'd done, either they had to unwrap her or they had to open the lid or whatever, but everyone was astounded that he did that. But they were even more astounded when she sat up. And it says in verse 43, "And he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this, and he said that something should be given her to eat." We won't go into all the details of that, but I think it's fascinating that two people came trying to reach out to Jesus Christ one day. One of them was totally hopeless, this girl. She couldn't even get out of bed. In fact, before Christ got to her, they'd wrapped her up and sealed her up. She was going to be buried. Another one was totally helpless. She had spent every dime she had to get healed. One of them was in the prime of life. According to the Jews, when you reach the age of 12, you are just entering womanhood and you are at the prime of your life. The other one was at the end of her life. She was so dirty in the sight of society, she was so unclean in her own estimation, that she couldn't even get near people. These two people made their way to Christ with a need. Both of them reached out and touched him in their separate ways. He required from both of them that they confess who he was. Jairus said, "I know you have the power, Jesus, please." The woman said, "You healed me and made me clean." You know, Jesus Christ is waiting for some of you to be honest with him. If you have a need, you need to realize only he can meet it. Whatever is killing you, crippling you, defiling you, Jesus Christ has the power this morning to to meet that need. And if you'll come to Him, His ability to sense and to touch your feeling is far greater than your senses to reach out and discern the world around you. He knows your heart this very moment. And if you'll but reach out in faith to Him, whether it be a trembling, withered hand defiled by sin, or if it be the voice calling from the deathbed, He hears them all. And by faith, you can be healed. You can be cleansed. You can have peace. You can be complete. But there is one thing. God has made a requirement that public confession must follow His transformation. If you've come to know Jesus Christ personally, you must, with your mouth, confess that. It's okay if you prayed quietly. It's okay if Christ took you through the greatest, darkest hour of your life and supported you and you know His power. But if you have come to that point, then number one, you must acknowledge that God senses your life. He has felt your needs. That by faith you have touched Him. You have acknowledged only Christ can meet your need because you went to Him. But if He touched you, you have to admit it publicly. Now I want to ask you something this morning. Have you touched God? Have you reached out to Him with your need? He's aware of it. He knew that woman was coming to Him. He knew Jairus was going to dive at His feet. He's waiting. Have you reached out to touch Him? And if you have touched Him, are you willing to publicly confess that? It's very interesting that in the New Testament church, no one was considered a believer. Totally obedient until they, in front of a group of people known as the body, publicly declared Jesus Christ in baptism. Do you know why? Because anybody can do anything in secret, but there's a great price for identifying with Jesus Christ in public. If you have touched Jesus Christ and He has touched your life, confess Him before men. If you have a need, reach out to Him. Let's bow for a word of prayer. I thank You, dear Lord, for this touching scene from Your Word. I thank You that these two were touched by God because they reached out and sought to be touching You, and they confessed it. And You made them whole and complete. I pray for any this morning that are struggling. They are seeking to secretly follow You, and You allow no such thing. Help them to step out publicly to confess You as Savior and Lord. And we'll thank You for what great things You do for Jesus' sake. Amen.